Hello, Red vs. Blue fans, and welcome back to the AfterBuzz TV Red vs. Blue After Show. Today we're covering episodes 13 through 16, and we will see you after the opening.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
If you haven't seen Clue, you have no idea what this means. Which means that, obviously, you should see Clue. Back me up here.
Yes, that is a fact. You should do that.
You really should see Clue.
We know who the murderer was, and furthermore, we're going to tell you how it was all done.
Step by step. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AfterBuzz TV Red vs. Blue After Show. We are covering Season 14, Episodes 13 through 16. So we have Death Battle, Meta vs. Carolina, Dawn of Awesome, and that is the title of one episode, Gray vs. Gray, Caboose's Guide to Making Friends, and Head Cannon. With me, of course, is the wonderful Megan Salinas.
Hey, guys. You can tweet at me at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
And I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxet. That's KIAXET. We have the chat live, and it looks like everyone in chat is very happy to be talking about Clue, which is awesome. And we have the hashtag ABTVRVB. If you have something fun to say, if you have a question, if you have a comment, throw it in the chat, throw it in the hashtag. You may well get a shout out on the air. Mark could not join us tonight. He's super busy. He is swamped. Tweet him your well wishes, tell him you love him, and we will see him back next time. Yes.
Yes.
Let's talk about that death battle.
Since Mark's not here, I'm going to do my best boomstick impression
right
now.
Do it.
It's time for a death battle. That was terrible.
That was better
beautiful.
Than I could have done.
I couldn't do that. That's awesome.
Thank you, Alexis. On the ones and twos, ladies and gentlemen.
It's been a while. I'm glad to be back.
Oh, yes. We've missed you so much.
It's been a hot minute, but I'm so happy to talk about this death battle.
Yes! This was not released at RTX. I think they released one of the trailers for this at RTX, but there was a ton of talk about it in the Screw Attack panel. And part of it just didn't gel for me that, oh, hey, we're doing this. And I'm like, oh, they're doing Meta vs. Carolina. That must have been because they teamed up with Rooster Teeth. Oh, it's going to be part of Season 14. Took me 3 weeks to realize that, you guys.
You know, it was one of those... It didn't necessarily sink in for me at first either. I mean, it's one of those things because they've done a death battle for Ruby, but, you know, that wasn't... canonically,
yeah,
that wasn't part of Ruby.
Whereas this is canon, kind of.
Not really, because the meta was already dead, but...
But the answer to that question is canon.
Which I appreciate. So, do we want to talk about, like, their analysis? Like, it was... Because one of the big things about Death Battle is that they look at these... fan questions of who would win in a fight, which is, of course, the thing that all nerds do.
Of course. Then
they actually try to apply some logic and sometimes even science and math into it. What do we think of their assessment of the meta and of Carolina?
I think there's one big chunk that they left out of the metas, and that's something that played into the battle itself, but that wasn't talked about in the analysis afterwards. And that's that if you dangle an AI in front of the meta, he's immediately like, oh, shiny. He's like a meerkat, just up and over.
It is literally the carrot on the stick for him.
It really is. It's just dangling the carrot, so that way you can sneak up behind him and beat him with the stick. Like, this has come up in canon more than once. He gets 100% distracted if there's an AI in front of him. And that's the only thing that kept Carolina alive, because Epsilon basically came out, did a little tap dance, and said, look at me! Not her. Me.
I'm distracting you
because otherwise she would not have won this, and that was the crux of it in that moment. And I'm disappointed that they left that out of their analysis of the meta's weaknesses and their post-battle analysis, because obviously they wrote it in there.
I mean, it's one of those things where I guess you can't give away your hand too soon, because if you do, because I think overall, with that omission aside, I feel like their analysis was pretty complete.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they got a really good handle on both these characters' strengths and weaknesses. And first of all, it's just nice to see the meta again for a whole, you know, 2 minutes.
That theme. Them using that theme.
It's so good.
God, just every time that musical cue comes up, it's like, I think I'm going to die.
It still gives me goosebumps and makes me so happy. And don't get me wrong, I'm glad the meta's dead, and I'm glad Carolina won. But at the same time, it's one of those things where... And we've gone over this time and time again. Season 6 is still my favorite season. And so anytime we make a return to that, and granted, the meta's gone, we shouldn't forcefully go back to it. But in this sort of context, it's great. And that theme still gives me goosebumps. But yeah, back to your original point about them leaving out that bit, they don't, in their analysis, they want to present things, I guess, as much on an even keel as they possibly can.
So the ending of the battle is a surprise.
Exactly. If, you know, for stuff that shouldn't be a surprise, like, say, any type of character going up against a character from Dragon Ball Z or anybody going up against Superman, you want to still give the initial presentation as though these two people are still on a level playing field that it could go either way. If you say, yeah. Oh yeah, the meta is also super distracted by AI, that's giving away the ending.
But they didn't talk about it afterwards either.
But I think the more important, yes, it was, I feel like they didn't need to talk about it. I feel like the thing that they needed to talk about more was the cohesive unit that Carolina and Epsilon have formed. You know, they have become a really solid team together.
And this is what, and we're wandering way off into AU territory, and I love it here, but Sigma was originally given to Carolina. Could you imagine... I think she
what that could have been.
Oh, I think she could have kept him in check. Like,
yeah,
the first couple of pairings worked with the psych profiles, and that was the point. I think if she'd stuck with Sigma, she could have kept Sigma in check, and they would have been terrifying in a completely different fashion.
Well, but again, because Project Freelancer was secretly evil, or maybe not so secretly evil, you know. On the one hand, yes, Project Freelancer probably would have run a whole lot smoother. On the other hand, they were an evil organization doing evil things. So had she just accepted it and everything had just kept going smoothly, it probably still wouldn't have... Something terrible would have eventually happened.
I'm not saying that everything would have been hunky-dory. Like, we still would have had Epsilon come down the line, and that's a lot harder to cover up.
Things would have been very different.
I think we wouldn't have had a meta. In any capacity, not in a Carolina becomes the meta capacity, but I don't think the meta as an entity would have existed because I think Carolina has enough force of personality to keep Sigma in check, where Maine did not. That's not to say that Maine didn't have a personality, but that he functioned very, very differently from Carolina. So you put this burning AI in his head that's all ambition, and that's just not him.
That's something that, like... Sigma's force of will is overpowering at that point.
Yeah, he doesn't think like that. It's like putting Tabasco sauce in peanut butter. It's not a thing.
What the heck is that analogy?
It's not a thing. They're two great tastes that do not taste great together. You don't do that.
Why would anyone try that?
And watch, someone's going to try it and send me a tweet. Please don't do that to yourself.
Sounds terrible.
Please don't, guys. Just don't.
But, like, as always, the animation for this fight sequence was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I do want to ask, though, like, with the mother of invention, what do you think of, like, them choosing that as the setting? Is the crash site for the mother of invention that still has power for some reason?
I was just sitting there going, why did Carolina come back to Sidewinder? Why did she come back to the mother of invention? Why is she running a training sim on the deck, of all things? And how is Phyllis still there? You know what? Forget it. We just needed a backdrop that we could model for this fight. This is all hypotheticals except for the conclusion.
Well, and again, I know there was some question as to where in time each of them were being pulled from, and I like that it was Carolina with Epsilon and then the meta as the meta with all of the AI that he had. It's kind of both of them at their
prime. You pull them at their best.
Exactly. So I appreciated this, and I gotta say, I buy this. I buy this as being the logical conclusion.
Yeah, Asia in chat says, shh, it's a death battle. Like, yeah, no, that's pretty much how you have to do it. You just kind of take a step back and go, we needed a setting. We needed a reason for them to fight. Okay.
There we go, done.
It's like, I've read fan fiction like this before. We need setup in order to actually make this happen, but the setup is not the point.
That, and, you know, I talked about missing the meta a little while ago. I've also, it didn't hit me until we were actually at RTX and actually interviewing Jen Brown, but I've missed her being Carolina. I know it hasn't been that long since the end of season 13, but, like, it feels like it's been forever.
How many times have I said I miss Wash?
Yeah.
A lot. He's been in one episode.
Yeah,
for like 3 seconds.
And yeah, we haven't heard her since the very beginning of this season, and even then it was just very briefly.
Yeah. So they grew on us. We love them, and now it's like we've got a lot of Blood Gulch just being Blood Gulch, which has been a ton of fun. But we do really miss our freelancers, just in general.
There's just no pleasing us, because we're like, we miss Blood Gulch, and then we miss the freelancers.
Well, I am completely biased, because I've said this more than once, Wash is my favorite character.
Part of it, too, for me, is that we were as great as the Freelancer trilogy was, or the Merc trilogy was, sorry, as great as that was, we were all expecting it to be the story of Carolina and York, you know, at the club.
We were expecting Herrera.
Exactly. So I'm very satisfied that we got to see Carolina doing what Carolina does best just being a badass.
Well, and
great.
Given how they framed the initial trailer for season 14, they wouldn't have given us all those freelancer voices if they weren't going to actually give us freelancers. They love doing the dance puppet dance thing, but they're not cruel like that.
That's true.
So it's coming down the line. I'm sure it's coming down the line. We have a whole bunch of people who were in that credits reel who haven't had their episodes out yet. So it's going to happen. I'm sure it's going to happen. It's just been a real long time, guys.
And
I did my waiting. It's 12 years of it, and Azkaban, et cetera, et cetera.
Not to jump ahead, like, at all, but also, you know, just having Epsilon for a little bit, given that his fate for the end of season 13 is ambiguous.
He's gone.
But, like, we don't know what kind of effect that's leaving on the characters he's left behind.
Yeah.
And so seeing him back with Carolina and then getting the Caboose episode, which we'll talk about in a bit, but having those two things, you know, if you're watching all four of these at once, like we do to refresh for these after shows, oh, man, it's a little bit of a gut punch.
Well, and even little bits of headcanon where we have Alpha.
Yeah.
For just that short bit of time, and his head is Sidewinder, and it's like, oh, well, I'm not okay with anything right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the framing of the death battle a little bit.
Okay.
Because we got it in Blood Gulch, and we started with the classic pan up to Griffin Simmons, and instead of you ever wonder why we're here, which is what we expect with that scene, you ever wonder who'd win in a fight? No. Nerds on the internet. Nerds on the internet. It's like, yeah, but that's all of us.
Like, and maybe it's just because we get to talk to the cast and crew a little bit more often than a lot of other fans do.
Yeah.
But and granted, we don't get to talk. We're not like besties or anything like that.
Oh, we're totally besties. I was over at their house last night in Austin. No. That is not
how
like, that works.
But, you do have to resist that initial. So who would win in a fight? Because that is the go-to nerd question,
oh, God,
unquote.
The go-to. Like, who would win in a fight? Who would you want to date? Which, that's a minefield, you guys. That God, with shippers, that's a minefield to ask people. What would their pet be like?
Or just, who's your favorite?
Who's the favorite person that you voice? Like, just have them pick children, why don't you? So it's hard to get beyond the initial questions. And so we have Death Battle to sit there at the initial question and just break it down.
And be like, okay, well, we're going to answer that. And I loved the going through with everybody and the realization that Griffin Simmons didn't know Carolina was the director's
made
daughter.
Me so happy.
And that Allison was her mother.
It's just the, you know what? In retrospect, this makes so much more sense.
Remember when
it's totally obvious.
Remember when we used to just sit around and talk?
I loved the bit with testing science on Griff, testing the dome shield, and then Caboose going, "Science is fun," and Simmons, "I've said it for years." Just a lot of the back and forth with the Blood Gulch characters was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, the framing of this was really well done. This, I guess, simulation, I suppose.
Good enough.
The framing was great.
And then, command's best is just a step above incompetent.
And not to mention that it doesn't take long to start seeing the similarities between Boomstick and Sarge.
Oh my god, And that's how you spell your name in Buckshot. Like, that is my favorite. It's canon. I don't care. It's canon. That is the hill I will die on.
Attack is the son of Sarge from Red versus Blue.
I'm done. It is the canon that I never knew I wanted. I never asked for it, but it showed up, and I will happily adopt it and make it my own.
I concur with that assessment.
Oh my god, because it's just beautiful.
Hey! Alexis, did you get a chance to see the death battle?
No, I only saw a piece of it.
When you get a chance.
No, yeah. It's on my computer still at home, just waiting for me when I get off of work.
It's so good. Yeah. So good, girl.
I know, I'm so excited.
Piece of fall been really good. And just poking the fourth wall for the framework for all of this, where did you get all this footage? Have you been spying on us? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Well, if canonically speaking, they're from Command, it makes some sense. Not a ton, but some.
You know you're right. I did not even think of that.
Wow.
You know what my last couple of weeks have been like.
Well, again, it doesn't make complete sense because there's no way they could have gotten footage for everything.
Yes, but for Blood Gulch, it makes good enough sense.
There we go.
And the thing with Blood Gulch is that it's always just good enough.
Yep. There you go.
And it's just it's our job to analyze their weapon strategy. Why did you say it like that? Just every time that someone kind of steps back and peers over the fourth wall and goes, really? Really, we're doing this? We're doing this. Yeah, okay.
It's always fun when a show acknowledges when someone turns to the camera and they're like, what are you looking at? Who are you talking to?
Just like turns to the camera like they're on The Office. Yes, thank you, Asia. I have a great realization face.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do. I'm really tired, guys.
It's been a long
week. Work went crazy. Yeah, do we have anything? The other thing I want to bring up is the starting off the death battle, talking about who gets to pick the movie. And Epsilon talking about action movies being, everyone talks in one-liners, the plot is non-existent, and it seems like the characters are just there to beat the hell out of each other. And I'm like, hang on!
Lamp shading just seriously, ever so slightly.
He's just wearing that lampshade at that point. Like, and here it is, I'm going to tip it to the audience.
The audience and then he threw it at the camera. But
and missed completely.
Because he can't aim.
The only church that can aim is Carolina.
Well, I'm Tex, but like that's a version of church.
Well,
it's
she married into the church.
There you go.
We're talking like actual church, biologically church.
There you go.
Like a cologne or something. Biologically church.
Oh, that's weird. That's terrible. I don't like that. But I do want to bring up one other thing about the death battle was the song that they used during the fight.
Yes!
Slingshot, I believe you said.
By Trocadero.
So good!
We tried to find it and open this episode with it and like, oh yeah, the soundtrack's not out for season 14 yet because season 14's not over. Oops. So we went with the Clue music because Clue is wonderful, and now I just want to watch it again.
Oh, any time's a good time to watch Clue.
Any time. It's pretty glorious.
So speaking of Clue, should we move on to the mystery?
Gray versus Gray. I have to say that I loved starting with the black and white and red all over joke, but that's also because I'm like, you know, a sunburned panda. Yesterday's newspaper. There's like 6 punchlines to this.
You want to know what the most grim punchline for that joke I've ever heard?
What?
Or for that quote-unquote riddle, a zebra in a blender.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard red and green and going 60 miles an hour, and that's a frog in a blender.
Oh.
Gotta go fast.
But Gray versus Gray. And I appreciate Vic going, you know what? Actually, that punchline doesn't make any sense until you see the episode.
And this was my least favorite of this particular set. And I think you pointed this out to me, and I think you're probably right about this, is that every time we've gotten a group of idiots that isn't our group of idiots, I'm less interested. And then I don't grow to love them over the course of the episode because it's like, okay, new people. Why should I like you?
Well, and to be fair, it took a long time for I thought the first season of Red vs. Blue was hysterical, but it wasn't until about probably midway through the season before I actually started caring about them.
Yeah. And the first season of Red vs. Blue was absolutely just great.
Yeah, in terms of comedy. And then towards the very end, when they're more, you know, forming their story and everything like that, that's when you start to make connections with these characters as characters and not just little, you know, bobblehead machinima puppets, I suppose you could say.
It's like, oh, I actually give a damn.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
But like I said, that first episode, you know, depending on your sense of humor, you either love it or you hate it. And if this is, and same with the Funhouse episodes, if this isn't your sense of humor, you're not going to, one or two episodes isn't necessarily enough to be really endeared to these people as characters.
Well, and I liked the gimmick that it was shown in gray and that all of them were colorblind. And so obviously with the joke, the going theory is that they're all reds and, you know, Command is a bunch of assholes, which obviously... Like, I liked that as a setup, but the execution was just kind of, okay.
Well, it does seem...
Okay.
And odd, it seems like a good setup for a lot of, like, situational humor and, like, misdirect and things like that. It's not as strong of a setup for a murder mystery, and which is what this episode is, because the fact of the matter is when this person died, the lights were out. So the color of the perpetrator doesn't matter. And maybe that's part of the point. But when the deed was actually done, the lights were out. Nobody actually saw what happened, even though they were all, although I do love the twist that they went the clue route. And they all did it.
See, I just love the conversation about red, the color of tomatoes, celery, and the ocean. Celery is purple. I watch a lot of Top Chef. I watch too much Top Chef. But at one point, they had a challenge where each chef got a color, and they had to make a dish that was entirely in that color. One of the chefs was colorblind, and they gave him purple. So he picked out an eggplant, and he's like, you know what? People tell me that eggplants are purple, so I'm just going to make sure that everything I do matches this eggplant. And I think he came in, like, second place on that challenge, or he might have won, because he made a really good dish, but it was just like, I can't see purple. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what color this is.
Good enough.
I don't know what color this is.
And I thought that was one of the best, you know, reality being stranger than fiction. Even though reality TV is fiction, still, I thought that was a really funny way to go about it.
That is a great setup, again, for situational humor.
Yeah.
I will say I loved the character voices that they gave. I couldn't tell you who was who. And having watched this episode 2-3 times, I could not tell you who was who.
Reg was the
girl. Which, again, part Hutch, of the point.
And Hutch was voiced by Ross, because this was the Game Grumps episode. And the only reason I knew that was because it was pretty much the Papyrus voice, and I was just real happy to hear that, and then he died.
I was like, was it Ross doing that?
It had to have been. These were the Game Grumps.
I know, but, like, did you look at the credits
I'm
to make sure?
I'm pretty sure it was him. Who else does that? I'm pretty
love
sure
the Papyrus
it was
voice
him.
So much.
I'm pretty sure it
but
was
yeah,
him.
But, yeah, I loved the character voices. I loved the guy that sounded like Skeletor / Papyrus / a mobster.
I think that was Hutch. I think Wynn was the one with the ever-changing, I should have been in Command, just listen to my accent. Like, I don't know, names, guys, I got nothing. I know that Reg was the girl and Hutch was Papyrus.
And one
That's
of them seemed to be channeling Cecil Baldwin from the host of Night Vale.
Yeah, very Night Vale.
Excellent. I don't have a deep enough voice to do a good impression.
Excellent. I got nothing.
I think
the
there was...
lineup was funny because they were all dumb enough to go for it and then be like, wait a minute, Why isn't this working?
Like I said, a lot of, again, it's one of those things where if it's not your sense of humor, it's not going to land for you. If it is, you'll enjoy it, but it's still not a ton of time to get attached to these characters as characters. And given that they're only here for an episode and then they're dead, you know, you're not necessarily supposed to get attached to them, I guess.
Well, and that's what happens with the Funhouse episode. We had them for two episodes and then they just got wiped off the face of the planet. Like, is this how we do cleanup afterwards?
I wonder if, like, part of the point isn't that, like, all the other simulation troopers are so... Like, the group that we had at Blood Gulch is, like, a magical combination.
Yeah.
Because not only do they somehow manage to not kill each other, they also manage to take down all these tyrannical authority figures and accomplish these great things.
Well, and the Blood Gulch group started off as hand-picked. Flowers picked them, and then Caboose and Donut coming in were both accidents, and somehow that just worked out.
And that just happened to be the magic sauce that made everything work, that somehow made it so that they didn't all kill each other. But yeah, I think maybe that's part of the point, is that these guys are special. Because every other group of reds and blues and or all reds and or all blues somehow end up killing each other as a result of these simulations and manipulation from command. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking way too much into it, but that's kind of what we do.
Like, what happens if they're colorblind and we give them color-based prejudices anyway? Well, people are stupid, so...
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like a Vault-Tec experiment. From Fallout. You know, Vault-Tec is the company that created all the vaults, and they didn't do it to save humanity. They did it to perform horrible experiments on people. And just because. And so this sounds exactly like a Vault-Tec experiment.
I mean, we are talking about Project Freelancer.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would not surprise me if there's not some connection between the guys who work at Vault-Tec and the guys who work at Command.
Okay. So, Vault-Tec... Project Freelancer, Command, Aperture Science.
Yes, I was thinking about Portal the entire time.
Who would win?
We're doing our own death battle. Who is the worst? Who is the worst of the worst?
Who is the best at being the worst?
We should throw
it in the hashtag. Give me your best arguments. I want to see this
we
afterwards.
We should put a poll up. When this is done, I'm going to put a poll up on the ABTV.
We should.
On the Rooster Team account. Aperture is your vote?
Yep.
I'm going to go with Vault-Tec because they did their experiments on civilians. For Aperture, I feel like you had to sign a
waiver.
That's
right, you did have to sign a
waiver. And I'm
going to
come down
on
Freelancer because they literally blew up Florida.
Those monsters.
Earth was already a target from the Covenant, and they just went in and wiped out a major population center.
But like, it's also Florida.
But how many people do you think were vacationing there at the time?
And it is where Disney World
is.
Yeah,
Disney
World.
Yeah,
so they killed Florida for the sake of children. There's 49 agents. Oh, poor Florida. Oh, they killed Florida for the sake of covering something up that was really stupid.
I feel like they didn't need to.
No, they didn't.
It feels like a really
arbitrary thing
to do.
But the counselor is insane.
The counselor and the director.
So we have that. I'm still going with Vault-Tec, though. Any final thoughts on Gray versus Gray?
Just that I love murder mysteries, and it is a shame that some of the humor didn't land with this one, especially with a group of really funny people. But at the end of the day, like, there were still parts that made me laugh, and I love murder mysteries, so I'll probably still go back to this one.
I just loved Stars Aren't Planets. Yes, they are. Big, glowing planets. Yeah, okay. So let's talk about Caboose's Guide to Making Friends.
I don't know if we're emotionally prepared to talk about this one, Katie.
I love the beginning. I loved where we get this nice little tease about, I'm going to show you the origin of, and then Caboose walks in. How'd you get in? The window. He's talking about the window that was in the trailer for
this season.
There
was a door next to the broken window.
There was a door next to the broken window, and I'm just like...
So is Vic in the Twilight Zone?
If anyone could fourth wall like that, it's Caboose. He's the only one that's aware they're in a game.
Yep, that is true.
And he kind of treats everyone... Things I'm quoting from past Red versus Blue panels at RTX, he's the only one that's aware that they're all in a game, and he kind of treats everyone else like they're cats.
And Shut if you, up, are you serious?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And if you haven't ever lived with a cat, volunteered at a cat shelter, known cats, they do their own thing. And sometimes they act like they know what they're doing. And sometimes they fall down the stairs, get up, lick their paws, and go, I was planning that the whole time.
Well, and not like, to mention,
sometimes
it
they're
would,
just stupid. If but Caboose, they act like they're not.
If Caboose really does see everybody else in Blood Gulch as cats, that totally explains his intelligence level. Because there's an XKCD comic that actually charts out your IQ in terms of your proximity to a cat. And the closer you get to a cat, the further your IQ sinks because it just, you're a kitty.
So if anyone actually follows my Tumblr, there's a reason that my Tumblr tag for cat pictures and videos is, you're a kitty. Like, it's that comic.
Katie,
so
I want a shirt with Caboose and petting cats that look like everybody. And so you're a kitty.
As long as the kittens don't have spikes, because that makes him angry.
Nope. Yeah, no spikes.
Kittens with spikes. Although I will say, when this animation initially started, first of all, it's just adorable.
It's so cute. And then the sound design with the little squeaks every time someone sits down. Ah!
Yeah, not going to lie. Back when I was still drawing terrible fan art, I did draw like a picture of the red and blue team like as chibis, like with their helmets on, so they're just bobbleheads. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't very good, but it reminded me of that sort of, you know, you give them a big head, their little like Powerpuff Girl arms. It's so cute.
It was absolutely adorable. And it took me a minute to go, oh, making friends. He's literally making okay.
Because he's
like
building
friend material.
Them.
Cotton is soft, but also catches on fire. Like, spiders aren't good friend material.
How, at what point did he think spiders could help me make something for Epsilon?
He's trying to Cinderella it. Okay.
Aww.
Yeah, I'll go
that's
with that.
True.
I'll go with
there,
that.
There we go. That's like a fairy
so
tale.
Spiders not being good friend material and all of the, you can make friends and then you have a best friend that you can talk to about everything. And then he started talking about, and sometimes you lose friends. And I just, oh, I was not expecting the sudden feels. I think we were all expecting a Caboose episode. You know, it's going to be light and funny and animated and crayon. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I forgot that he's actually deep and very emotionally aware. Shoot.
And that this episode was written by Miles Luna.
Ah!
That was the best reaction.
You monster.
I went nonverbal because otherwise we'd be marked explicit.
But no, and I imagine Caboose is a very difficult character to write for.
He is.
In terms of, like, writing for him well.
I've seen, and the thing is, I've seen people write him well, and I've seen people write him poorly. And it's just a matter of what you come down on and whether or not you really grasp what kind of character he is. He is one of the most difficult Blood Gulch characters to kind of get your mind around because it's so easy to just be like, oh, he's dumb and occasionally says funny things and is really strong. And it's like, no, he is extremely emotionally aware. I am an emotional time bomb. Like, yeah, no, that's a thing. And that's actually very aware.
And again, very perceptive, you know, because so much of what he says is nonsense, that when he actually has some really good insight, he gets dismissed as just, you're just talking more nonsense. When he has hit the bullseye on multiple occasions, but gets like dismissed every single time because they're like, shut up.
Because again, he's vaguely aware of the fourth wall. He knows they're all in a game.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a weird thing to keep in mind.
And anytime we talk about not only Epsilon, again, in the wake of season 13, but talking about Alpha too, because the end of season 6 marked the end of Alpha, and Alpha Church is my favorite character. And so it's heartbreaking because he's been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's such a bummer, and it's something that Caboose clearly never really got over.
Oh, no. Here, Rosanna in the chat says, Miles is why we can't have nice things. Miles gives us many, many nice things, but boy, do we pay for them. There's always a cost.
No.
Magic always has a cost.
No, here's the thing is that, yeah, when we say, oh, Miles, how dare you, or Miles, you monster, we're kidding. Because what he's done is he's written something very emotionally poignant. And it's not one of those, like, just writing something. It's not, like, emotionally manipulative. And it's not, like, shock value either.
Because there's a point where you hit soap opera and it's like, oh, we have drama for the sake of drama and we're going to make you sad. And I've watched stuff like that and it just...
And granted, all film and television and all that stuff is emotionally manipulative to an extent. But there's exploitation and a lot of shows do horrible things to horrible characters just to be like, ooh, we're shocking you, and things like that. And we've actually hosted shows about shows that do that. But seeing something like this, it's not that we're mad, Miles. It's just that you did your job very, very well.
Yes.
And we appreciate you doing your job very, very
well. This is an episode that not only understands the character, but understands where the series is at this point and where the fan base is at this point. Like, this is an episode that 100% gets it in that way that Caboose does.
Yeah.
And so it's just, this episode's really good, you guys.
Yeah, and I missed who said it in the chat earlier, but just someone said that they loved the message of this. And that's true, because, you know, you will lose friends in your life, but, you know, you can always make new ones. And that's not to say that friends are interchangeable or anything like that. But Caboose doesn't have to be heartbroken forever because he lost Alpha and because he's lost Epsilon. He has this network of people. He has a family still of all these people that he's made friends with.
And we have that bit at the end with, you know, Wash and Tucker coming in and helping him up and all of the people from Chorus showing up. And it's an uplifting message at the end, even
and
if
him
it really does hurt to get there.
Being able to pick up the pieces and make something new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really great stuff.
I think we've talked about the episode for longer than the episode actually was.
That's okay.
The episode is like 5 minutes.
And again,
it was a very poignant 5 minutes.
For anybody who has lost a friend, this is something that can resonate with you emotionally. And Miles, not to get too real, understands that. He knows what that feels like. And so the end of this episode is very meaningful.
I guess they showed this episode at the Ruby Volume 2 screening.
Did they?
Neither of us were able to go because that was when our last after show was for Red versus Blue. Yep. So, yeah, that, dear God. What a good episode.
Very good.
What a good episode. I would posit that that is the best of the bunch that we're covering this week.
Absolutely.
As much as I absolutely freaking loved that death battle.
Yeah, no, these were really good episodes. I feel like we say that every time. There were really good episodes, but some are just at a different caliber. And granted, we can't expect the death battle to be, like, super emotionally deep either. That's not what it's for.
No.
But, like, this, for an episode that could have just been, oh, isn't Caboose so silly and dumb? It really was very poignant and very meaningful and very emotionally effective.
It was an episode that got it, written by someone that got it. And I just, this animation, simple design and simple animation are some of the hardest things to do. It is so, so difficult to mimic the design and the animation and whatnot of younger kids. Because we have more context, because we have more knowledge, because we have, you know, more experience, it's very hard to go back there and do what would a kid actually do as opposed to what would an adult think that a kid does. Like, they're very, very different. Which is the difference between a well-written child character and a brat of a child character. Mm. Which is, all kids do that. No, honey. So this is very difficult to do. I just want to say kudos to the animators, kudos to the design, kudos to all of that. It was so well done and so cute that you noticed it. And then as the episode went on, it didn't detract.
Yeah.
Just the whole package worked really, really well.
And Red versus Blue does this a lot. Like, when the laughs are really good, the emotional punches hit that much harder. And vice versa, when the emotional punches are really hitting hard, the laughs end up hitting a lot harder, too. So, like, again, really good balance of comedy and drama in something that could have been a throwaway episode.
Yes. Just, oh, so good. All right. Hitting the last one.
I was going to say, do you mind if I just crawl under this table and cry
we're
for
just
like
gonna lie here
the next
like
10 minutes?
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about headcanon for a while. And the title is a pun. I'm so happy. This is Barb's episode. This was written by Barbara. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I don't approve of the pun, but I love O'Malley. And again, talking about characters that we've missed, I've missed O'Malley. And not to mention that the finale for Blood Gulch was fantastic.
The like, O'Malley finale?
That's not goodbye, everyone.
That's not a pun. It rhymes.
Goodbye, everyone. But it's been fun. It's been fun hosting this show. No, but the thank you, Alexis. But the whole thing about O'Malley is he was such a fascinating character, and Matt played him so well with the whole, you know, Doc being like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
It was so good, and I have missed that version of O'Malley so much.
Because we have something kind of like that in season 13, because poor Doc, just people should not live in Hammer Space. That's not supposed to happen.
But yeah, it was great hearing the O'Malley voice come back for that. But having that as like a manifestation of your own internal stuff is one thing. Having it be the character is another. And it was nice seeing that AI come back. Omega.
Yes. And so I loved the Lord Satan Von Kills a lot.
Yeah. And
I need that on a bumper sticker.
And, it is true that throughout all of Blood Gulch, we never got to look into anybody else's mind besides Caboose. And so it was nice getting to see into everybody else's headspace a little bit.
I did like the, 3.5 seconds that we got in Caboose's headspace, because it was, oh, I missed this. I forgot how much fun this was. Like, I think the only person whose headspace we've actually seen is Wash. And those were just those. Yeah, it was ugly. Anyway.
But yeah.
We caught it for a hot second and it was in
pieces. I am Agent Washing Tub.
No. I mean,
I know which one you're talking about, but.
Freelancer powers activate.
You actually act a lot like you do on the outside.
Put them in a folder marked secrets, because everyone knows that that is the best way to keep secrets.
But don't tell anyone.
But
getting to look inside Simmons' head.
Let's knock him out one by one. Let's talk about Simmons.
He's
got
a
bookshelf and a bust of Sarge.
And Sarge is his biological father.
Sarge is his biological
in his mind.
And Griff,
oh,
just,
Lord.
I'm pretty sure I disrespect you behind your back, but I can't prove it. And then walking away, I disrespect you.
Pay no attention to him.
Take his coat and fetch him a glass of our finest Irish whiskey.
So
your finest Irish whiskey is probably Irish mist, and
well,
that's not whiskey.
He's Dutch-Irish, remember?
Yeah, I know.
But it's kind of nice getting this other side, because Simmons thinks of himself as an intellectual and as, more sophisticated than the people he's surrounded by, when clearly that's not the case. He's just a bundle of insecurities.
I mean, he's smart. A lot of it is more, he has a high intelligence score and a low wisdom score. A lot of book smart, not a heck of a lot of common sense.
And he doesn't test well. Because
no,
apparently
he doesn't do well
with timed exams.
Because I guess learning disabilities are just not a thing in the future. It's the Army and it's Freelancer.
Fair enough.
Question mark. I don't know. I just don't even know. Yeah. Oh, Simmons. So he decides, yeah, we're going to work with O'Malley. We're going to do this. I said yes. And then O'Malley's like, oh, thank God I can leave.
Exit.
And just that bit. This is just like that time with your dad. Wow.
Which, again,
father issues. It makes total sense.
On one hand, ow. On the other hand, I laughed. It was.
I mean, comedy is cruelty.
And then Caboose is just being Caboose because Caboose. Donuts headspace, I swear, oh my god, the sparkle filter, the stage, the canned applause, and just my lightish red head. Don't ever call it that again. Well, the cool kids call it the donut hole.
I'm going to go and kill the cool kids.
I laughed for a solid minute after that. And then the episode ended, and I was still sitting there laughing about the cool kids call it the donut hole. I don't know why that one got me. Was what got me.
Sorry, Alexis.
I said it's just really silly.
It's very silly. It's very silly.
Yep, puns.
I was going to say, did you hear the rest of the episode over your fits of laughter?
I did. I was doing that very silent laughter where you're obviously still dying, but there's no noise coming out.
You're hunched over, and there's just no sound
that's
escaping.
The best laugh.
There's a video going up tonight. You can all watch it.
But yeah.
Yeah. Then we head over to Sarge, and Sarge's head is a war zone.
Which makes perfect sense.
And my favorite bit of that is just, and senility is trying to overtake the hippocampus. I'm like, yep.
Explode. It makes total sense that Sarge's head is just covered in explosions.
It really does. And then just like the slew of griffs. What are those? Stress relief. Just a lot of it was pretty straightforward, but the jokes were just, they were so on point.
They were. Like the humor in this episode, especially given the emotional punch from last week's, the comedic timing in this one was so well done. And anytime we return to Blood Gulch, if you can't hit those comedic beats,
you're dead in the water.
Yeah, exactly. And Barb nailed it. She really did.
Oh, these were all wonderful. Griff's head, of course, has nothing in it except for Simmons being a butt.
Eh, can't be bothered.
They like me better.
Eh, who cares?
Yeah.
Get out of here, you.
And then he goes into Church's head. And all it is just white and snow. I'm pretty sure it's Sidewinder.
And he descends down.
It just this flash of light pretty much goes, oh, you want to take over? Okay, sure, whatever.
Which,
really? Yeah, I have done this for so long. I just can't even be bothered to care anymore. If you want it, it's yours. He's just tired.
But, it was funny because when O'Malley in, the Blood Gulch finale was hopping from person to person, I kept going, ooh, I can't wait to see what happens if he hops into Church, because Church was, he was a very angry person.
Yeah.
And so I figured that sort of mix would have been very volatile. And, honestly, the funniest thing that they could have done was to have him have no reaction. And then they made it a plot point later on. And that was one of those retroactive, oh, snap sort of things. But actually getting to see what's going on in this headspace of two AI units being reunited, it's, again, they don't know it for some reason.
I think Omega knows because he wasn't being used to help. I'm mixing up my things.
But yeah, he didn't know in this moment. He might have known it after the fact.
True.
But yeah, getting removed from it, like it might have been one of those things where it sunk in, and then when he got acquired by the meta, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, we got to go back there. It felt right being there. It felt right being whole.
Just pointing at Sigma, you've been holding out on me.
But yeah, this, because you don't feel bad for O'Malley ever in the entire series.
No.
You feel bad for Doc, but you never feel bad for O'Malley except in that sort of, he's an ineffectual supervillain sort of way.
It's a very ha-ha sort of thing.
Exactly.
But we were just talking about how for this, it's, the better the jokes are, the more the feels hurt, and the more the feels hurt, the better the jokes are. Case in point.
Exactly.
Case in point. This episode was hilarious, and then you just kind of hit the brakes and go,
You know it's coming, too. So, getting to see this moment, it packs quite a punch.
Yeah, super good. Well done, Barb. Well done.
Well done.
Well done, everyone.
Yeah, God, just this whole
so
thing.
So good.
Really good.
I'm in pain. I think this is what pain feels like, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have any final thoughts on headcanon?
Just that it's nice to go back to Blood Gulch every now and then. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's nice seeing these characters that are no longer with us.
Yeah, we got three instances of Church over these past four episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Tex and O'Malley, and yeah, it's just nice seeing them.
Yeah. So many feels.
Yep, quit so making us feel feels. Things,
oh
guys.
Oh my God, why are there so many emotions? Stop it! Stop it! Yeah, I'm out of feels. I'm dying.
So many feels.
Do we have anything? All right. So, because we're on a little bit of a delay with chat. Chat, if you have any final comments, anything that you want us to talk about, now would be the time to let us know. So start throwing that in chat now. In the meantime, I want to talk to you guys about iTunes. Can you do the thing?
I have it already pulled up.
Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone who has left us a review. We absolutely adore you people. And the best thing that you can do for us, if you want to keep this after show on the air, go on to iTunes, subscribe. If you do AfterBuzz Red versus Blue, it shows up. Subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating, preferably 5 stars. And leave a review and just let us know what you think, because our producers do go onto these reviews and they do take a look. And if they see, oh, look, a whole bunch of people really like this after show, we should keep it, then they'll keep it and we'll get to come back and it'll be great. So who do we have?
I don't remember.
It's been like a month.
I was going to say, I don't remember the last time we actually read these off, because did we read these off last time?
I don't know if we did.
Okay, I'm gonna go with
This is all of August.
I was gonna say, because I see March,
so hit the
31st.
End of June.
Okay, because there are a few here from the beginning of June. I'll go ahead and read, because I don't remember if we read those or
not. I think we did those. I don't think we did end of June.
All right, if we're just doing, because there's nothing from the end of June, but we do have something from July.
Do it.
So I'm gonna just say, in case we missed it, Artful Mexican had to say, from robots to freelancers, 5 stars. Great show from Brumby 13, 5 stars. Amazing show, Coley Shands, also 5 stars. Thank you, guys. And then the latest one we've gotten is I Like the Podcast from Rex 9460. This is a great podcast, and I love the guest. Keep up the great work. Thank you, guys.
So you guys are wonderful human beings, and we adore you. Thank you so much.
You guys are the best.
Yeah, if you leave a review, it gets read out on the air. So we meet every 4 weeks. I don't know how many episodes we have this season. I don't know if next
week. No idea.
I don't know if next time is going to be our next episode or not. If someone wants to tweet us and say, we have 20, we have 22, we have 24, we have 8 billion. Yeah. Well, I know we don't have 8
billion. Season 14 will never end.
Yeah, so I've quoted Asia like 3 times. You just keep catching my eye tonight. Is there anything to be mined from Simmons being Griff's only protection, or am I a desperate shipper at heart? 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah.
That's the best I got for that one.
They're in love. 6 of 1. If only they could see it.
6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. Let's be real. They're an old married couple. I'm down. I'm down.
I could see it, but I could also just see it as them just hating each other.
I'm down. I honestly think that in terms of that episode, it's just Griff being that lazy and Simmons being that much of a constant. And well, he's not going to bring Sarge in. Sarge tries to kill him.
And again, you have to take it in context of when in the timeline this was.
Yeah, way back when.
Yep.
Okay, Beast Wars fan in the chat says we have 3 more episodes.
Oh.
Can you do me a favor? Can you tweet me if we have confirmation for that? If it was in an interview, if it was... links or it didn't happen, basically. I hesitate to quote something without actual
Cite
word of
source.
God backup. Cite your sources. Thank you. That's the phrase I
College
was looking for.
College taught me to do that.
College taught me a lot of things. Yeah. All right, do you have any final thoughts on, I keep saying this week's episodes, this month's episodes?
Just that, again, really great set of episodes, emotionally resonated. Really good stuff. The death battle had amazing animation. Kudos to the animation team. Kudos to all of the writers this time around, and the performances were great. Just all in all, this was a good set of episodes, and I'm gonna go curl up in a corner and cry.
Yeah, me too. It's just like, yeah, I'm just gonna find a corner and lie down and die here. Let's do that. Arlen in the chat says there's like 5 people who haven't had their episodes yet, so I doubt that there's 3. Yeah, so if anyone has a link for an interview or for anything with an exact number, please tweet me.
And
please tweet us the link, like actual confirmation, because, again, the citing of the sources.
And we'll be putting up a poll soon to see who is the most evil scientific organization.
We will.
Aperture, so Freelancer.
So follow ABTV Rooster Team, that's TEAM, because we are the Rooster Team, ladies and gentlemen. And the poll will be on that Twitter. You should follow it anyway, because that's where we talk about all of our AfterBuzz Rooster Teeth stuff. Yay! Yeah, oh, Alex Show Productions has a list. Bernie, Matt, Trocadero, Ready Player One, Ernest Klein, which I'm really looking forward to. Immersion, iZombies creator. Shannon's hasn't aired yet.
That's true, too.
So we're probably looking at least 24 episodes.
So maybe possibly half a dozen left? I don't know.
8.
Okay, there we go.
Ish. Maybe.
I don't
question
know.
Question mark. We're not sure. So, yeah. Thank you guys so much for watching tonight. Thank you for all of your input. Thank you, chat and Twitter. You have both been super active. That's super great. Megan, where can the people find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I am also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out. I was actually also on the Adam Ruins Everything red carpet last week. They just premiered season 2, so if you want to go ahead and watch those interviews, they are up on AfterBuzz TV's YouTube channel. Go check those out.
And you can follow Mark on Twitter at MarkBDonica. And I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and YouTube at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on Snapchat at Kia Prime. YouTube is mostly reaction videos and vlogs, so if you like watching my face while I watch these things, if you want to see me laughing and or in a lot of pain, that's where to go. We are on the Voltron After Show. That is on Thursday, so we will be back here tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Steven Universe is coming back around on its new day and time. It's going to be Thursday, September 1st at 8 p.m. And we will be back for that. And we will be back for Red vs. Blue in 4 weeks. 4 weeks. Mark your calendars. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
I am an emotional time bomb.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.